So today we're going to be looking at King Saul. We're going to be almost entirely in the book of 1 Samuel. Saul is the first king of Israel. So we're talking about the year 1050 BC. That's where we are. Saul the king unites the quarrelsome tribes of Israel, and he defeats a number of enemies, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Amalekites, and some others. Saul has a son named Jonathan, and Jonathan is a very loyal and great friend to David, the son of Jesse. David, the young man who defeats Goliath, the Philistine champion. David, the guy who was anointed to be the next king of Israel. And that anointing takes place in secret, shortly after the Lord says that he is taking the kingdom away from Saul. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Listen to this verse. This is 1 Samuel 15, 26 to 29. Samuel said to Saul, I will not go back with you, because you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you as king over Israel. Harsh words to the king. And so as Samuel turned to leave, Saul caught a hold of the hem of his robe, and it tore. And so Samuel said to him, likewise, the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to one of your neighbors, to one better than you. Ouch. Gave it to one who's better than you. He who is the glory of Israel does not lie. He does not change his mind, for he is not a man that he should change his mind. It's what Samuel had to say to Saul when the kingdom was torn from him. Now, he didn't lose the kingdom that day because he stayed king for a while. But that's when it all started. Now, some of you might notice that I'm holding a spear. It's right here. This is the spear I'm talking about. And you don't have to worry because it's not a real spear. I made this spear. It's actually mostly just bamboo and a dowel rod with cardboard duct tape to it, so it's not dangerous. But it's a big weapon, isn't it? It's kind of impressive looking. And by holding it here, it makes a statement, which is kind of what I'm trying to do here. So it makes a statement. And so what kind of a statement do you think it makes with me holding this spear here? What do you think? Everybody's afraid to say anything. I probably look a little silly. So we can get that intimidating. Maybe if it wasn't so silly, right? Power. Yeah, I mean, I'm holding a huge spear next to me. And the reason I'm doing that is because we're talking about King Saul. And one of the things that you will notice in the Bible is that almost every time we talk about King Saul, he's got a spear in his hand. It's actually weird. He almost always has a spear in his hand. And so what we're going to do is talk about that. See, King Saul's a guy that likes to make a statement as well, just like what I'm doing here. He likes to make a statement. So he holds a spear a lot. We're going to look at five passages, I think, and talk about Saul. We're going to talk about his spear, and then hopefully by the end of it, some of you will come to the realization that I'm not the only guy in the room that's holding a spear today. Like I said, we're going to be almost entirely in the book of 1 Samuel. I'm going to lay this down now. Because I don't want to hold it the whole entire time. I think we got the idea. So let's see here. We're going to start in 1 Samuel. What is going on? I'm like all caught. We're going to start in 1 Samuel 22:6. 1 Samuel 22:6. This is the first passage we're going to look at. probably make it through five unless we run out of time. 1 Samuel 22:6 says this. I'm reading out of the NIV. Now I realize I'm not gonna tell the whole story. 1 Samuel's a pretty long book, and there's a lot of things that happen. And so if you're familiar with some elements of the story, you'll pick this up right away. If you're not, then you got homework to do. You can read through the book of 1 Samuel. It's actually a super interesting read. But we're going to hit some of the high points, specifically looking at Saul. And since I'm preaching next week, maybe, we might look at David next week to look at sort of the counterpoint to Saul. We'll find out. 1 Samuel 22:6 says this. Now Saul heard that David and his men had been discovered. And Saul, spear in hand, was seated under the tamarisk tree on the hill at Gibeah with all of his officials standing around him. So this is just an example of where we have the writer of 1 Samuel making sure that we know that Saul is sitting there with his spear, as he normally does. This is kind of how Saul holds court, the king's court, spear in hand, making a statement. His spear is, like Laura said, kind of a symbol of his power, his authority, his kingship. It's a lot like how monarchs later in time would hold a scepter, you know, that thing that looks kind of like a club or a mace, except it's all prettied up with jewels and gold and that kind of stuff. And it says, notice me, I'm the king. Similar to a crown, which just says, notice me, I'm the king. I'm the guy in charge here. Except this isn't just a scepter, not just a symbol of his authority. This is an impressive looking weapon. This is a king that has a big weapon with him all the time. And so it's a little more than just a symbol of power. I mean, Saul's actually really proud of his ability to be able to use a spear. He's good in battle. And he would like for you to know that. I'm good in battle. I would like for you, if I'm Saul, I would like for you to remember that I've had a lot of victory in battle. I've killed a lot of people in battle with this particular spear. And so remember that. I'm a mighty warrior. I'm your king, and I'm a mighty warrior. He's proud of his military performance. He's proud of his ability to use a spear. And he just wants you to remember that. Do you know people like this? Do you know people that they don't carry a spear around, but they have an attitude about them? Maybe it's the way they dress or the way they carry themselves. They want to remind you of some of their victories. They want you to know about their power and their skill in certain ways. This is some of the stuff that Saul wants to communicate by having a spear in his hand while he sits on his royal chair. And that is why Saul gets so jealous of David. So jealous of David. Now, I said that David got anointed in secret. He's going to be the next king, but Saul doesn't know this. And honestly, throughout the book of 1 Samuel, it's a little bit of a mystery to figure out exactly when does Saul learn that David's going to be the king. He learns it somewhere along the way, but the story doesn't explicitly tell us how that comes to be. But he knows that David is a mighty warrior, and David is a popular guy. And so Saul becomes very jealous of David, specifically whenever he hears the ladies singing a song one day. Do you guys remember this song in 1 Samuel? It's in 1 Samuel 18, verses 7 and through 9. I want to read a couple of verses here. It's talking about how they danced and they sang. And I'm not going to sing the song, but it goes something like this. Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. Something like that. And Saul hears that, And this is what it says. It says Saul was very angry. And this refrain, it galled him. And he says, they've credited David with tens of thousands, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? I don't think he actually knows that David is going to be the king at this point. So it's an ironic foreshadowing that he would say, what more can he get but the kingdom? And it says, from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David, the mighty warrior. Jealous eye on him. Kept his spear close at hand. Remind you that I'm better than David. Even though the ladies sing about his tens of thousands, I'm better. Saul thinks that his weapon reminds us of his power and his victory. That's what he thinks. But it actually points to a little more than that. Because we're going to see that Saul's spear is also a symbol of his fear. It's a symbol of his paranoia. And it's a symbol of his insecurity. Because if you remember, Saul is actually a very, very fearful and paranoid guy. All the way back in 1 Samuel chapter 10, when it comes time for him to be crowned the king, do you remember what Saul was up to? It's in 1 Samuel 10:22. Hope I wrote that down right. No. Oh, here it is. Yes. So they're getting ready to make him the king, and they inquired further of the Lord, hey, has the man come here yet? Meaning Saul. Has anybody seen Saul? Is he here? We're ready to make him king. Is he around? And the Lord said, yes, he's hidden himself among the baggage. What kind of guy hides in the luggage? I mean, seriously, he's hiding amongst the luggage, the baggage, when they're getting ready to make him king? He's fearful. Now, no doubt, it's a big thing to be made the king of Israel, the first king of Israel, but the guy is hiding. This is like at the ceremony. That is so weird. I think it's weird anyway, to be hiding in the baggage. But seriously, you can identify with this guy, right? I have felt like that before. When it actually comes time to do the big thing, you're off hiding somewhere. Maybe not physically, maybe just emotionally or intellectually. I'm not ready for this. Saul's insecure. He's nervous. And so sometimes insecure and nervous people, they have to carry a big spear with them. Because it diverts attention from their insecurity. You know what I mean? Maybe you know people like that. They're nervous about things. They're insecure. And so, you know, I'm not picking on anybody in particular, but maybe I need to drive a really big car or a really loud car because I'm nervous about myself. I'm not saying that's why you have a big car. But maybe it is. I don't know. But I'm just giving an example. There's all kinds of things that we do because I'm afraid you're going to see who I really am. So I hide behind one thing or another. Maybe I carry a big spear with me. This nervousness is something that Saul doesn't really seem to outgrow through the book of 1 Samuel. Because David, he's continually getting more popular. And we see that when Saul is told that he's losing the kingdom, that God is tearing it away from him, just like Saul tore Samuel's robe, Saul is filled with fear. And subconsciously, that spear is almost like the kingdom. I don't want to let go of it. I don't want to lose it. Check this out. 1 Samuel 26:7. 1 Samuel 26:7. This is another story that this could be a whole sermon by itself, obviously. But we're just going to look at a couple of details here. 1 Samuel 26:7 says, so David and Abishai, Abishai went to the army by night, and there was Saul. He was lying asleep inside the camp with his spear stuck in the ground near his head. Abner and the soldiers were lying around him. So it's not weird, I guess, to sleep with your weapon right by you, right by your head, stuck in the ground. But it's just a strange little detail that's brought out in this passage. The guy sleeps with his spear right by him, really close to him, right by his head. It reminds me of somebody that sleeps with a gun under their pillow or something like that, you know? What does it say? Maybe Saul's like, I need it in case of an emergency. Like, you know, if we get surprised in the night, then I'll have my weapon right there and I could fight off the enemy. And that could be. That certainly could be. That makes sense. Keep in mind, he's like in the middle of the camp, surrounded by all these soldiers. I mean, he's kind of safe, even though, strangely, David and Abishai are able to sneak right up to him. But there's a reason for that. But I tell you what, it's more than just that he keeps his spear there in case of an emergency. There's a fear. There's an insecurity. He keeps it close to him because it's precious to him. He wouldn't dare want to share it. He wouldn't dare want to lose it because it's a picture of his power, even of the kingdom itself. He keeps it close. Keeps it right by his head, even when he's asleep. Why is this spear so important? Why? For that, we kind of have to go back to chapter 13. Chapter 13 is when we first learn about Saul's spear. And if you look in chapter 13 at verse 16, I'm looking in the NIV, and the heading for my part of the Bible here, starting at verse 16, is Israel without weapons. Israel is without weapons. Remember, the Philistines are the big bad guys, at least in 1 Samuel. They're the big bad guys. And the Philistines are doing a little bit of kind of economic, strategic warfare, in a sense. And what we learn in this passage is the Philistines have said, I know what we should do with the Israelites. We should make sure they don't have any blacksmiths, because then they can't make weapons. If they can't make weapons, then they're going to be easy for us to push around. And so besides the fact that they keep them from having blacksmiths, they can't make weapons, they also say, let's also charge them some big prices if they want to sharpen their tools. So not only do they not have blacksmiths to make their own weapons, then we're charging them if they want to sharpen their axe or their mattock or other things. And so it says that there's not, this is verse 19, not a blacksmith could be found in the whole land of Israel. Because the Philistines had said this stuff, you know, we don't want them to have that. So there's this battle coming, and you look down to verse 22, and it says this. On the day, this is 1 Samuel 13:22. So on the day of the battle, not a soldier with Saul and Jonathan had a sword or a spear in his hand. Only Saul and his son Jonathan had them. These are the only metal weapons in Israel. Now, Jonathan is never explicitly said to have a spear. He has a sword. In fact, it's a really cool deal. Here's another sermon that I can't preach right now. But Jonathan gives his sword to David. It is so awesome. It's in chapter 18. There's a shortage of weapons. He gives his sword to David to say, I am with you, brother. That's another sermon, but we'll preach that one some other day. But my point is, Jonathan is never explicitly said to have a spear, but Saul is repeatedly seen to have this spear. I'm not saying it's the only spear in Israel. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying it is way rare to have a spear. And it might be that Saul's got the only one. So you can imagine why he's like, just want to remind you, I am the man with the spear. I'm that guy. Where did he get the spear? I don't know. It doesn't actually say. But he's special. Because mostly what the Israelites have is bow and arrow and slingshot. That's how they fight their battles at this time. Wood and rock, but not metal, except for Saul. Except for Saul. So there's this lack of metal weapons. Saul's got the only one. In fact, here's an interesting thing to know. In 1 Samuel, there's only two spears that are specifically mentioned. In the whole book, two spears. Saul has one of them. Guess who has the other spear? Take a guess. Anybody. Somebody knows. It's Goliath. Goliath is the only other guy mentioned to have a spear. So you got two guys, Saul and Goliath. So you can imagine on the day of this battle, I know I'm totally jumping around. I hope you're staying with me. I see a lot of eyeballs, so I think you're staying with me. On the day of the battle, when Goliath comes out, it's in chapter 17. Let's look at this. Yeah, in chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, starting at verse 10, it says that the Philistine said this. The Philistine, meaning Goliath. We're talking about Goliath. The Philistine said, "This day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." Mentions how big his spear is. The tip of Goliath's spear, the iron part, weighs 15 pounds. 15. I assume that's big. You know, that's all I can say. I guess that's big. I don't know. It sounds like a huge, impressive spear. And he says, "Give me a man, let's fight." And on hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Dismayed and terrified. There's only two spears mentioned. You got Saul, the Israelite champion. He's a head taller than everybody else. And Goliath, who's also mentioned to be very tall, and he's got a spear. Does it make sense that these two would fight? That makes sense, right? You got the two champions. They should fight one another. Saul loses out so big this day. So big. He's over here cowering. Just like he was with the baggage. He's hiding. It's the moment to step out as the king. But the thing is, Saul was trusting in his power. And he said, "I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough. I don't think my power is enough to beat this guy, so I'm afraid." So, of course, you know what happens in the story. David comes out with rocks and beats Goliath. He beats the giant. With his skill with the slingshot, yes, don't miss that. He's skilled with a slingshot, but more than that, he defeats Goliath because he trusts God. Saul was trusting his power and says, "It's little, it's not enough." David trusts the Lord and he says, "I think he's more than enough. He's more than enough to defeat this Goliath." Saul loses out so big. This was his moment to show that he is the king. And he misses it. What does he carry the spear for? Come on. I thought he was a mighty warrior. Lots of victories. Much power, all of that. Evidently not. By the way, I'm up to number 4 now. I know we've looked at a lot of verses. I'm just letting you know where we are in the outline if you're trying to follow me. I don't have like a sheet for you to tell you all of that stuff today. Number 4 in the list. Most of the references to Saul's spear are associated with his anger. Most of them. Because what we see is a whole bunch of times Saul tries to kill guys with his spear by throwing it at them when they annoy him. Usually that's David. He throws it at him several times in chapter 18 and then at least once more in chapter 19, verses 9 to 11. Let's look at that. Actually, I want to start at verse 8. 1 Samuel 19, 8 through 9. I hope you find this interesting. I was like so fascinated just to study Saul's spear through the book of 1 Samuel. It's a weird thing to look at, but I tell you what, it gives you insight into who this guy is and why it is that God says, he's not my man. I'm taking the kingdom from this guy. I'm sorry. Back to chapter 19. Starting at verse 8, it says, once more war broke out, and David went out and fought the Philistines, and he struck them with such force that they fled before him. Yay, more victories for David. This is a common theme in 1 Samuel. David is very victorious. Next verse, but an evil spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he was sitting in his house with his spear in his hand. While David was playing the harp, Saul tried to pin him to the wall with his spear, but David eluded him as Saul drove the spear into the wall, and that night David made good his escape. Is that just weird or what? David is out fighting the Philistines, having a great victory once again. And why is Saul brooding in his house, sitting on his royal chair again, with his spear in his hand? This guy is the weirdest guy you can meet. It's just a funny picture. I don't get it. David is trying to play this music to calm the king down, but it says Saul is tormented by an evil spirit. An evil spirit that God is allowing to oppress him. Hear this. Saul has brought this upon himself. He's brought it upon himself. The spirit is said to be, quote, from the Lord. But what that means is that all evil spirits, every one, are completely subject to God's control and operate only within divinely determined boundaries. Every evil spirit is completely subject to God's control, and it operates only within divinely determined boundaries. I'm actually just reading the NIV study note there. Does God tell the evil spirit what to do? In other words, is it God himself that is tormenting Paul? Is he telling the evil spirit what to do? Okay. The evil spirit is evil and does sin, and that's a lot like you and I. We do evil things and we sin. Does God tell me to sin? Does God cause me to sin? No. Does he cause the evil spirit to do sinful things? No. Does he allow it to happen? Does he allow me to sin? He does. Does he allow this evil spirit to torment Saul? Yes. But only if God says, I will permit it. Only then. Remember, Saul is the king. He is the anointed one of Israel at this time. And the evil spirit only gets that opportunity if God says, I will permit this. So God has allowed the evil spirit to torment Saul, but it is Saul who's brought this upon himself. Saul has disobeyed God. He has lived in fear. He's lived in paranoia. He's not trusted God. He has opened himself to witches and to mediums. He's made oaths in God's name and then not kept them. He's offered illicit sacrifices. These are just a few of the things that Saul has done to open himself to this. I just bring that up because it's in the text there. The thing to notice is that Saul is a frustrated, failing king. He is a frustrated, failing king. So he still has this symbol of his power and his authority, the spear, but now this spear, it becomes the way in which he chooses, through the influence of the enemy, to attack those who are close to him. Those that challenge him, those that threaten him. His spear, which is supposed to say, remember, I'm a mighty warrior, now becomes a way for me to say, I will cause you to do my will. Does this make you nervous? No. Like I said earlier, it's harmless. It's just cardboard. He tries to kill David at least three times. He tries once to kill his own son in 1 Samuel 20. This spear was supposed to bring you confidence in Saul. That's what he wanted, for you to feel confident about him. But instead, now he's using this spear that he used to defeat the enemy with. Now he's turning it upon those close to him, even his own family. Don't be like Saul. Don't be like Saul. Don't let a supposed strength in your life, a supposed good thing, begin to separate you from those that you love. Are you carrying a spear today? Our insecurities, they make us paranoid. They make us defensive people that lash out at those around us. Our insecurities. Don't be like Saul. He's using this weapon that was a good thing, that made him a mighty king. Now he's using it to try to kill even his own family. We have to move on. So then if we go back to 1 Samuel 26. Back to 1 Samuel 26. This is David. He's sneaking into Saul's camp. And this is a cool story where he actually steals Saul's spear. Whee! Actually gets it. This spear, it's the symbol of his kingship, of his kingdom. And he gets in there and he steals it. But David does so because he wants the king to know, I don't wish you harm. Saul is so afraid of David. And Saul is so crazy because there is nobody that's more loyal to the king than David. And so David sneaks in here and he steals the spear. Let's look at it. 1 Samuel 26. We read some of it already. This is when, starting at verse 7, Saul is lying asleep with his spear stuck in the ground near his head, surrounded by his soldiers, and Abishai says to David, God, though he'd be whispering, God has delivered your enemy into your hands. Let me pin him to the ground with one thrust of the spear. But David said to Abishai, don't destroy him. Who can lay a hand on the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? As surely as the Lord lives, he said, the Lord himself will strike him. Either his time will come and he will die, or he will go into battle and perish. But the Lord forbid that I should lay a hand on the Lord's anointed. David is a noble man. But he says, now get the spear and the water jug that are near his head and let's go. So he steals the spear and the water jug, and they took off. And like I say, if you read the story, you realize his whole point is to say, I don't mean you harm. I could have killed you. I pulled the spear out right by your head. I could have let it go right back down, and that would have been the end of you, King Saul. In verse 22, David says this. He holds it up. Here's the king's spear. Let one of your young men come over and get it, because the Lord rewards every man for his righteousness and his faithfulness. The Lord delivered you into my hands today, King Saul, but I would not lay a hand on the Lord's anointed. As surely as I valued your life today, may the Lord value my life and deliver me from all trouble. This should be a total wake-up call to Saul, right? It should. Actually, Saul has a lot of wake-up calls throughout this book. A lot of wake-up calls. And we could look at other ones, but we're not going to. Sometimes the people that actually care about us, like how David cares for Saul, they want to give us a wake-up call. Sometimes they even have to take things from us. Our insecurities, our destructive behavior stuff. And say, I'm just going to take this from you and remind you who you actually are. And remind you that I don't want harm for you. And you know what? Saul kind of gets it for a little bit. He actually repents, it seems like, in here. But it doesn't last. It doesn't last for Saul. Do you remember how Saul dies? We're getting to the end of the story, of course. Saul, yeah, King Saul. We're in 1 Samuel. Do you remember how he dies? He fell on his spear. Yeah. Now, he doesn't let this thing go. He's always got it with him. And in the end, he falls on his spear on purpose, takes his own life, because he's lost the kingdom. It was on a day when he lost all three of his sons. He lost his honor. Lost everything he had. All he's got left is the spear. So he ends his life. If you read it at the end of 1 Samuel, be totally honest with you, there's a bit of a discrepancy here. Maybe discrepancy is too hard of a word. It's kind of like whenever you're reading in the Gospels and one Gospel kind of says it this way and another one says it that way. And you're like, I got to add it all up in my mind. In 1 Samuel 31, let me find it. Saul says to his armor bearer, this is after he's been critically wounded by archers in a battle. Saul says to his armor bearer, this is 31:4, draw your sword and run me through, or these uncircumcised fellows will come and run me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer was terrified and would not do it. Armor bearer is smart. He says, I don't want to touch the Lord's anointed, even though you ask me to. He's similar to David. So Saul took his own sword and he fell on it. Sword. No, this is on purpose. Because he was at his wit's end. Now, if you look over to 2 Samuel, in the first chapter, there's this Amalekite that says, verse 6, I happen to be on Mount Gilboa, the young man said. This is 2 Samuel 1, 6. And there was Saul. He was leaning on his spear with the chariots and the riders almost upon him. When he turned around and saw me, he called out and said, what can I do? And anyway, I'm not sure if he actually fell on his sword or his spear. Maybe it was both. I'm not sure. The point is this. The point is that the very item that Saul was inseparable from, this spear that he thought made him worthy of praise, worthy of recognition, actually became his downfall, an instrument in his own death. His life, he's the king. This thing keeps falling off. He's the king, and his life should have been completely characterized as one who is leaning on the Lord. And so it's so odd that he ends his life leaning on his spear and dying as a result. I'm sorry, what? That's probably a discussion for another time. Kind of like some of these other sermons. There's a lot to talk about. But Saul found his worth in all the wrong things. This is kind of like the moral of the story of Saul's life. He found his worth in all the wrong things. It was power and prestige and military victory, being respected, all of these things. That's what Saul found his worth in. And so he ended up completely bankrupt at the end of his life because he neglected that which was most important. And that is our relationship with God Himself. Our faith and our trust in our Creator. Because He is the one that gives us worth. He's the one that gives you worth. It's not your power, your prestige. I don't care what your spear is like. It's not that. All of those external man-centered things, they let us down in the end. I want to close with one last verse here. And I feel like it kind of sums up what we need to learn from 1 Samuel, specifically from Saul's life. This is when Samuel first goes in secret, like I told you, to anoint David to be the next king. This is Samuel 16, starting at verse 6. It says, "When they arrived, then Samuel saw Eliab." I think that's how you say it. This would be Jesse's oldest son. So he showed up at Jesse's house because God says, "I need you to go and anoint the new king." So he sees Eliab, and then it says, this is what Samuel thought. "Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord." He sees this guy, Eliab. But listen to this. If you miss the rest of the sermon and you're just now waking up, listen to this part. This is important. "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at.'" The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Say that with me. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. He doesn't. It says, man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. God values things so differently from how you and I do. So differently. We have so many opportunities to feel worthless in this world. All of us, we have those opportunities before us every day to feel worthless. We entangle our identity and our value with all the wrong things. So many things to lean on to make us feel stronger or to help us avoid the pain. But God does not look at things the way that you and I do, because He looks to the heart. I need to wrap it up here. I think we will look at David next week, actually, because David says, some trust in chariots and some trust in horses. I almost think he's got Saul's spear in mind. Some people trust in their spear. But I trust in the name of the Lord my God, he says. I trust in his unfailing love. That's David's heart. And it needs to be our heart as well. What are you trusting in instead of God? What do you think gives you value? What makes you important? Is it a job? Is it a special relationship with that special someone? Is it your good looks? Maybe your sports victories? Maybe it's your big bank account? Sometimes our insecurities are actually the opposite. We switch it around and we say, we lean on this and we say, I'll never be good enough because I'm not tall. That becomes our spear. I'll never be good enough because I'm not a healthy enough person to make a difference. And so we lean on that instead of trusting God. What makes you who you are? The only answer to that question, you know as well as I, is Jesus. It's the only answer. Anything else is disappointing in the end. It can even lead to your ultimate demise, like it did for Saul, to trust the wrong things. But trusting Jesus is everything. He gave his life for you, on your behalf, to fix an unfixable relationship. Nobody could fix it except him. But he has the power and the authority to fix that relationship because he is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And that's where we need to put our trust. Don't lean on the wrong things. Don't find your worth in the wrong stuff. Trust in the Lord. Amen? Amen.